And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil, olive, beaten, for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generation.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today, Lighthouse to the Past, by Joseph Mindell, is the first in a series of programs of immortal cities, which were great historic centers of Jewish life and left a permanent mark in Jewish history.
Keep your head down, my friend.
You manage your boat. You needn't concern yourself about me.
The sail will knock you overboard when we put about.
I can take care of myself.
As you say. Watch your sight! Your head went down like a seagull diving. What a turned-up nose, my friend. Is it that you've been too close to my catch of fine fish?
Never mind. How much further to Alexandria?
Maybe you should have taken passage in a merchant vessel, one of the big ones, with three banks of oars and slaves to row them. That can go where it likes no matter which way the wind blows.
Do you find it necessary to talk so much?
Well, of course. A merchant ship would not have seen you. A little speck on the coast near Escalon, let alone stop to pick you up.
I will pay you for your trouble.
Oh, no, my friend. You will not deprive me of my good deed.
Yes, it was a mitzvah you performed.
What's that you said? What language did you speak?
Mitzvah. In the Hebrew tongue.
You never told me your name.
Eliezer ben Joseph. I'm from Jerusalem.
Eliezer ben Joseph, welcome. Samuel the fisherman, a fellow Jew, welcomes you to Alexandria.
Thank you. But how far is it? How much longer must we sail?
Look there, Eliezer. Straight ahead.
Where? I see nothing. Or only a stick, a pole there in the water.
That stick, my friend, is the lighthouse of Pharos. So broad and so high that you see it from this distance, which is still half a day's sail from here. I tell you, my friend, there is nothing like it in the whole world. And in the whole world, no city like Alexandria.
The word is from the Latin, civitas, meaning city. From it springs civilization, the making of city. And the chapters in the history of civilization are the separate, yet interwoven, stories of cities. Cities of every continent and every time, ancient and future. For if history is never twice the same, neither is it ever entirely different. This is the story of one city and of those who lived in it.
Never seen anything like this, eh, Eliezer?
Jerusalem is not a village.
Of course not, but...
I've seen a market square.
Have you? What would you like? Pearls from India, vases from the Greek islands, a gold brooch from Rome, silver and iron from Iberia and the northern lands? They're all here.
Samuel, your fish must be...
I place wonders before you, and you talk of fish.
Nevertheless, it will spoil unless...
Today, my wife will take the fish to market while I show you the city. My father used to bring me to this street with columns of marble on both sides. He would take me to this very column and tell me how he stood right here when Cleopatra rode into the city with Antony beside her. He was the second, you know, after Julius Caesar.
I'm not interested in the scandals of the Egyptians or of the Romans.
I suppose that's the same everywhere. But there, at the end of the street, the great theater. Last week, a tragedy of Euripides, newly discovered.
Samuel.
Now, on this side, the Caesareum. There, besides those two obelisks of stone planted in the earth like trees. And on that side, the library with 600,000 books, they say. Imagine, so much writing.
I've seen enough, Sam.
Oh, your nose turns up easily, my friend. At my fish, that I understand.
If I have offended you, it was not intentional.
But a city where 1,000,000 people live, a city built 300 years ago by Alexander the Great.
Moses walked here 1,000 years before Alexander the Macedonian, when there was only wilderness and no city. And I've not forgotten how and why he left.
Naturally, but it was long ago.
I've not forgotten that monuments of stone can be torn out of the earth to be carried across strange seas. Now, that many books of writing have been burned, but only one has survived the flames.
You're a very serious person, Elise. If you forgot the past a little, you might enjoy the present more.
I did not come to Alexandria for pleasure.
No? Then why? I see. The reason is not for me to know, huh? Well, perhaps you're right.
There are many Jews in Alexandria?
At least a quarter of all of its inhabitants. More, I dare say, than in all of Jerusalem.
Is there one who speaks for the rest?
Yes, insofar as that is possible. I myself have never spoken to him, but I can take you to his house. His servant has told him you're waiting, Eliezer. And as soon as his guests make their farewells...
Which one is he?
There, leaning against the table. That's Philo. Philo Judaeus is called. Well, my friend, I'll leave you here. The servant has told him you're waiting.
Why are you going, Samuel?
Me? I don't belong in such elegant surroundings. Besides, as you said, I have fish to sell.
Wait, I want... He's gone.
Can you believe, Philo, that we really saw a long-lost work of Euripides?
I do, Jason. The theme itself, the dramatic use of the chorus, the lofty poetry.
You hear, Menelaus? Philo agrees with me.
With all respect to our good friend, there are still words to be spoken on the subject.
Then come and speak them. I invite you both to my house for a simple meal, a cup of wine, and a lively conversation. Well, what do you say, Philo?
Your simple meals, my dear Jason, are banquets.
If it is so, still I've seen you do justice to them. Menelaus will vouch for that, huh?
It's true enough. I could easily become a slave to the pleasures of food and drink if I did not bring reason along to your banquets.
Then I invite you and reason.
Thank you, Jason. Another time, perhaps.
As you wish, Philo. I'll remind you. Are you coming, Menelaus?
With you, Jason.
Well, my friend?
My name is Eliezer Ben Joseph.
Yes, I know. My servant told me as my friends were leaving.
Your friends are Greek?
No. Alexandrian. I see what you mean. Jason makes offerings at the temple of Poseidon, god of the sea, while Menelaus and I meet at services in the synagogue every day. Both are my friends.
Then you are also an Alexandrian.
An Alexandrian and a Jew. As you are a Judean and a Jew.
No, it's not the same.
We are equally sons of Moses and equally subject in Alexandria as in Jerusalem to the emperor in Rome.
Not equally, I tell you. Gaius Caligula, the emperor, does not send you a governor. You do not have Pontius Pilate to steal the temple funds, to encourage his Roman legions to violence and robbery, to order executions without even the shadow of a trial. No, it is not the same.
It seems to me that you are making an accusation, Eliezer ben Joseph. But against whom?
I thank you for receiving me, Philo Judaeus.
Wait. It would pain me greatly if you were to leave now. First, because I have offered you no hospitality. And then, I have an orderly mind that will not let me rest until reason banishes perplexity. Not the same, you say.
It is not for me to instruct you.
Alexandria is not Jerusalem. No, not by far. Not in holiness, nor do we have a governor since the city is represented in the Roman Senate.
It is said that you have been granted Roman citizenship because...
Yes. You look around you, examining with careful eyes, but you do not answer.
Because you are a rich man. Because you spend your time at the tragedies of your...
Euripides.
At the boxing matches in the arena with your rich friends at banquets.
I follow as best I can, my friend. The 613 commandments of the Torah. I know where and what I may or may not eat. And as for the money Pilate took to build an aqueduct, he said...
To fill his own purse.
I do not dispute you. Still, we in Alexandria send out contributions to the temple every year. And so a share of what was stolen was also ours.
You do not understand at all.
Is that why you came? To expose my ignorance?
No, I came to ask for help.
Why didn't you say so at once? What do you need?
No, not for myself. Philo, the Roman burden grows heavier each day. There are many of us in Jerusalem, and I will give you their names who will no longer bear it.
I see. And the help you want? Money for weapons and supplies?
Yes, but even more. If you and Alexandria will join us in standing against the Romans, then...
Then what? No, at this moment it is futile to rise against them. Yochanan ben Zakkai has said...
He does not speak for me.
Does the prophet Jeremiah speak for you? In his day, he also urged the people to avoid destruction. There is a time when it becomes necessary to resist, but not now.
I thought that there would be men in Alexandria as in Jerusalem, but I was wrong. It is not the same.
Listen, my friend.
My name is Eleazar ben Joseph.
As you wish.
You use the word too lightly. Even Samuel the fisherman.
Who?
Even he never stops. My friend this, my friend that. When life depends on knowing who is truly a friend, you do not bestow friendship so easily.
You have learned a bitter lesson. No, it is certainly not the same. But neither is it so different as you imagine. We do not have Pontius Pilate, but we have another. We have Theodotus.
Philo Judaeus, you may deceive others whom I could name, but I'm not confused for a minute. Not in the slightest.
No, Theodotus? Then you are a fortunate man.
I've read your books, all of them.
I'm pleased that you wish to understand me.
No, I do, Philo, I do. I understand very well how you pretend to be a disciple of Plato and Aristotle and Pythagoras.
Ah, the grandeur of their thoughts is awe-inspiring.
But in reality, you pervert them. You make it seem as if they learned everything from your Moses in the mountain.
If you've really read my books, then you know that I do find a great similarity.
You see, you belittle the philosophers and magnify yourself, your own people. Oh, I'm not taking it. Though there are some who sit at your feet open-mouthed.
Are you perhaps referring to me, Theodotus?
My words were plain enough, Jason.
Then I'll make my own equally plain. I'm proud that I can claim Philo as friend and teacher.
You would do better to serve your own gods rather than study this foreign superstition.
I do not serve the gods less well because of Philo's teaching.
Jason.
I won't let him speak against you, Philo.
Thank you, Jason, but I need no defense.
Don't you? You seem very sure of yourself.
It is well known, Theodotus, that my forefathers settled in this city at the invitation of Alexander the Great.
Are you boasting of your lineage, Philo?
No. I am reminding you of the tradition of Alexandria. They were exiles, those who came, and they were granted the right to worship God and to live according to their own beliefs and practices. And the tradition has been followed by every emperor in Rome.
Provided you obey the laws of the empire.
We have always adhered to the law.
Have you? 2 months ago, a new edict came from Rome proclaiming the divinity of the emperor, Gaius Caligula. Have you obeyed the new law?
The auditor...
Let him speak, Jason. No answer, Philo. Then I will ask another question. In all the temples, Caligula stands in marble beside Saturn, Apollo, and Poseidon. Is his statue in your synagogue? Do you worship the new god?
You know the answer, Theodotus.
Yes. You have refused to obey the law.
No. That is, Gaius Caligula may yet exempt us from its provisions.
He may, but if he does, it may be too late. Remember that I warned you.
What do you mean, Theodotus?
It's no concern of yours, Jason.
Answer me.
It's no secret. There are many here who are angered by such flouting of the law. There are those who may take it into their own hands to punish the lawbreakers in the city streets.
Here, under the shed.
Oh. What are you doing here in the dock, Eliezer?
I was looking for you, Samuel.
They would have torn you to pieces if they caught you out there.
And you?
Me too. But I had to see to my boat, didn't I? The means of my livelihood, after all, bread for the hungry mouths of my children.
You speak strangely, Samuel.
Clothes for their naked backs, a roof over their poor, bewildered heads.
What is it, Samuel? Your wife and children, are they safe?
For the time being.
Your boat?
I found it. With only the top of the mast above water. They smashed everything in their way. Boats, shops, flesh and bone.
Well, what will you do?
Don't you know? Is it so different where you come from? I'll tell my children not to be hungry.
Come, Samuel. I'll go home with you now.
No, why should you? Oh, why not? Why shouldn't you see my house? Having already seen the splendors of Alexandrian civilization.
This is not a wilderness, Philo. We live in a civilized world.
Then you'll go to the emperor in Rome, this committee, as a delegation of Alexandrians?
Yes, of course.
And what will you tell Gaius Caligula? Well, he is an impatient man. Silence will irritate him.
We want you to speak for us.
What shall I say to him, Menelaus? Shall I tell him what we repeat every day? The Lord our God, the Lord is one. Or, thou shalt not bow down unto a graven image?
Yes, that's exactly what you must say.
And if he answers that he already knows?
Then he will also know what is just and proper in the most civilized city in the world.
Only here? Not in a primitive village in Syria or in the remote hills of Sicily?
We can only speak for ourselves, Philo.
No. Unless you ask for justice for everyone, everywhere, you do not speak for justice, but for special privilege.
We can't fight the whole world's battles.
Then who will?
We face a crisis, a question of life and death.
The same question that others face.
I don't deny it, Philo. But you've taught us in the name of reason.
Then you've learned only half the lesson. Not reason alone, but reason and righteousness. And what righteousness is there in showing you are Alexandrians and asking freedom for Alexandrians only?
You know what's happening in the city. You can't refuse to go to Rome.
I haven't refused.
Then there is hope.
Because I will speak to Caligula, who may not listen? No, Menelaus. Hope is in God, who has saved us in the past.
Now it is the same, Philo. The same in Alexandria as in Jerusalem.
It wasn't safe to come here, Eliezer, to show yourself in the streets.
I'm not concerned with safety. Do you really believe in this mission to Caligula?
There is no alternative.
Oh, there is. There is. This is not the first time it has happened.
No, not the first.
200 years ago, Mattathias made another choice. Philo, I told you I came to help and to ask help. Now come back to Judea and fight as the Maccabees fought.
The Roman legions are 200 years stronger.
Then we'll fight the harder.
You cannot stand against them. You can only die more quickly.
Oh, how reasonable.
And perhaps Jerusalem and the temple will die with you.
Well, who are you to talk of Jerusalem? The word drops awkwardly from your tongue.
Eliezer.
Reason has made you afraid. Too many generations in Alexandria have made you forget.
Eliezer, my forefathers have lived in Alexandria for 300 years.
I'm not interested in ancient history.
How can you not be concerned? Even before, ever since the Babylonians scattered the children of Israel throughout the world, in how many cities they have lived. Lived as citizens and as Jews. If I learn from Euripides, I do not forget Abraham and Moses. If I ponder the thoughts of Plato and Aristotle, I do not study the Torah less. Don't you see, Eliezer?
I see only that you are afraid.
Yes. You must not think it is nothing to stand before Gaius Caligula, emperor of all the civilized world, with power to humiliate, to torture, to take a life as easily as picking a flower. To stand before Caligula knowing that his madness removes him far from reason, and then to use reason to persuade him to restrain Theodatus, to change the law he himself made. Do you think it's easy? Do you wonder that I'm afraid?
No. It's not easy.
There are things remembered in all the generations, Eliezer. I write in Greek. I read the words of Moses and the Psalms in Greek translation. And yet I still remember, Im Eshka Chaich Yerushalayim. My Hebrew was not very good. If I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. Let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth if I remember thee not.
Your Hebrew is good enough, Philo. My friend.
How will you get back to Judea?
Oh, I'll manage to return.
To fight in the hills?
If that is what must be.
You came for help, and I've given you little.
No. There is strength in knowing that the battle may be fought in more than one way, and in more than one place. I must leave, Philo.
You're impatient.
There's much to be done.
And yet, Eliezer, what is the battle for, if not to gain the days of peace when you can call any man my friend?
A battle's not yet fought. Who will say which must end in victory? Caligula stayed his hand in Alexandria. But a generation later, Roman legions besieged Jerusalem and destroyed the temple. Yet the history of civilization is illuminated by the miracles of survival. Both cities are gone. But in the New Jerusalem and in the world, the thoughts of Philo Judaeus still live. A beacon. A lighthouse to the past and to the future.
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. Now we take great pleasure in presenting Rabbi Balfour Brickner, Director of the Commission on Interfaith Activities and the Associate Director of the Commission on Social Action of the Union of American Hebrew Congregations, Rabbi Brickner.
Philo understood well the complex problems of cultural and religious survival which faced his generation. That those same perplexities continue to plague us, his descendants, is not an insignificant commentary on what we have failed to learn from the past. To stand rationally before irrational men, employing reason to persuade what cannot be compelled, remains still the most difficult battle of all. No greater challenge was ever given to man than the eloquent plea of Hosea when he said, "Take with you words and return unto the Lord your God." The city has always symbolized the repository of man's finest expression of civilized living. Such ancient centers as Jerusalem, Alexandria, Rome, or Babylon represented the high water marks of their nation's cultural level. When they became irredeemably corrupt, the nations of which they were a part began to crumble. What was true of the ancient metropolis is equally true for their contemporary counterparts. Most American cities are in crisis today. Inadequate and outmoded socioeconomic patterns keep vast segments of urban and suburban populations sealed off from one another, separate and segregated, lost from the benefits of intergroup relationships and cross-cultural fertilization. Too often we seem to be competing in the degrees of injustice we do to one another.
There are those who say that the solution to the dilemma of the modern city lies in the eventual creation of one monolithic social structure from which will emerge a common man indistinguishable from his neighbor. It is, in my judgment, an unrealistic suggestion. Rather, let us concentrate our efforts on the development of individuals with the capacity to understand that America is a place where each has the right to be different, and where those differences are as respected as they are encouraged. The healthiness of our civilization depends upon the realization that whether in urban, suburban, or even exurban life, we Americans are a community of minorities. These can and must come to live side by side, none dominant over the other, each different from the other, one respectful of the other, and all calling the other brother, friend.
Thank you, Rabbi Brickner. Our Eternal Light drama today, Lighthouse to the Past by Joseph Mindell, was the first program in the Immortal Cities series. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Featured in the cast were Joe DeSantis as Samuel, Alan Bergman as Eliezer, Leon Janney as Philo, Stotz Cotsworth as Theodotus, Ivor Francis as Jason, and William Mason as Menelaus. The narrator was Wesley Addy. This is Howard Reek. Our program was directed by Daniel Sutter. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.